Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
How we doing, 405? Nothing to say, but what a day. How's your boy been? 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the first overnight back of the new year. Happy New Year, everybody. And it's our first opportunity to have Yankee Hot Stove at 4 o'clock. We talked our football. We talked our Giants and the impact of what this Sunday's game could bring. If they find a way to win this game, which won't be that difficult, they could drop all the way to eighth or ninth. What that impacts getting a quarterback at the top of the draft, what that means for Shane and Dable. What a disaster. So we've done with that. We've talked about the Jets. Let's get to Yankees a little bit because I did have an epiphany watching the Paul Goldschmidt press conference or media availability, which again, I hate. I hate these things. I don't know why. It's just weird to turn on the TV. I'm waiting for the thing to start. It starts, you know, there's nobody, like, can I get, I know Bob Lorenz is a busy man, but can Bob Lorenz be, like, at the desk and just introduce it? Like, I turn on, yes, it's like a replay of last night's net game. And I'm watching, and all of a sudden, like, there's a picture of no explanation, no nothing, no intro. There's just a picture of Goldschmidt staring at me up close in that awkward angle. And it's like half into the first question. I'm like, can we do it a little bit better than that? Not that I care. But watching the Paul Goldschmidt press conference, media availability, Zoom call, made me think of something. I'm starting to change my mind on something. In fact, I have. Because the more I think about it, as we've been talking the last few calls, we've been talking about whether or not the Yankees are the best team in the American League, which I think they are, whether or not Plan B is pivoted to make them better than they were last year, which I'm not so sure it does. I still wanted Juan Soto. Plan B still sucks. But I look at this team, and I'm sorry. It's a new year, and I'm trying to be positive. I said that. The Giants are making it tough. The Jets are making it tough. The New York Rangers are making it impossible. But there is something I can't have. And I can't have, and I'm not even sure I'm going to have it. But right now, I cannot have DJ LeMahieu as my third baseman. I can't. I can't even have that be a possibility. So the more and more I think about it, I know they're not going to go get Bregman. I don't think they are. I don't think they want to give him 6, 7, 8 years. I understand why. The money it's going to take, although his market's kind of falling here. And I'm open to a Bregman contract. I need a third baseman. I was watching the Yankee Hot Stove, the other edition of Yankee Hot Stove on the YES Network last night. And they're talking about how the Yankees' preference is to move Jazz to second base and get a third baseman, or even if they don't get anybody to play DJ LeMahieu at third base or play Oswaldo Cabrera at third base and move Jazz to second base. Like, as I'm thinking about all of this, and I don't think they're going to give big money over a long term to Alex Bregman, who's kind of started to decline a little bit, who won't, his numbers won't play the same here as it will in Houston. I am more and more open to the idea, and I'm starting to think they should go get Paul Goldschmidt's buddy and bring Nolan Arenado to this team. At first, I didn't like it. At first, I hated it. At first, I didn't think it was a good idea at all. And now, the more I think about it, I think they need someone. And if they're not going to go get Bregman, if you can find a way, now they are right at the threshold of that final tax threshold. They're right at $302, $304 million. They have money in Marcus Stroman that they're going to have to unload to make anything possible. Because I firmly believe, not for Nolan Arenado, certainly, Unless for whatever reason, some crazy reason, Steinbrenner gets, you know, the itch because of what's gone on with Soto and the Mets, and, you know, because of the idea that they're right there in the American League, and, you know, for whatever reason, if they're willing to go out and get Bregman, fine. But other than that, like, there is no move that Steinbrenner is going to value over paying double for every dollar over that last luxury tax threshold. He ain't going to do it. So if you look at this, if they can move Stroman's money and they still have maybe Grisham's money to move, if you can get with trade assets, if you can find a way to get the Cardinals to eat enough money where it's around $13 to $15 million a year for the next 3 years for Nolan Arenado, you bring him in here, you move Jazz to second, you've got Goldschmidt at first, you've got Volpe at short, you have right now not only the best pitching team in the American League, you have the best defensive team in the American League. You move Judge back to right, obviously. You've got Bellinger in the outfield. Dominguez is the only question mark on that entire team defensively. Wells is so much better than we thought behind the plate. Volpe's a gold glove caliber shortstop. You get Nolan Arenado. You got Goldschmidt. You got Jazz back at second. That's the best pitching team in the American League. That's the best defensive team in the American League. And I still think those two guys, and I was watching Paul Goldschmidt talk about coming to play at Yankee Stadium in August. And I got to admit, and maybe it's because there's been so much nonsense about the pinstripes not mattering and the Yankee Stadium roll call not mattering and nobody wants to be a Yankee and blah, 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 all the crap that the Met fans have been spewing because one player chose not to be a Yankee. Listening to Paul Goldschmidt talk about it, knowing Nolan Arenado wants out, knowing that all he's ever played with is Colorado and then St. Louis, which has been a good team and a great franchise, but you know that fan base. This is the same fan base that applauded an opposing starting pitcher for a nice six-inning performance. The pressure isn't there. The excitement isn't there. Bring these two guys at the tail end of their career, chasing a championship in New York, two buddies so they'll have someone to talk to. You get excellent defense. I'm starting to come around on going out there and getting Nolan Arenado because something has to be done. Because as much as I'll defend Brian Cashman, you know I do, and I still will. Love you, Brian. I'm telling you, with him and Boone, with the contract that DJ LeMahieu has, if you give them an opportunity to play him, I'm afraid they freaking will. And I can't have it. I was just sitting there thinking about it, and I'm listening to him talk, and his excitement to come be a New York Yankee, and his excitement to play in that building, and remembering how he came in last August and played in Yankee Stadium, and even just the excitement of New York. He mentioned the All-Star game at Citi Field, like all of it. You bring those two guys aching to prove that they still have something, and you turn this team into the best pitching and best defensive team in the American League, and Nolan Arenado still might have something to play. If you could figure out a way to get that money under 300, because that's the only caveat to this, because maybe, just maybe, Bregman can convince Steinbrenner to go over that luxury tax. Maybe. He's a good enough of a player. He's still in his 30s. He's a proven World Series winner and playoff contender. Maybe. I don't think so, but maybe Steinbrenner would do that. There is no chance he's going over for Nolan Arenado. There's no other player. So you have to figure out the money. There has to be multiple trades to this thing, but I want Nolan Arenado. I think it's more plausible. I think it's more feasible. I think it's more doable. And the more I think about it, if you're going to lean into this run prevention stuff, go out there and be the best defensive team as well as the best offensive team. Find your way back to the World Series. I've completely changed my mind on Nolan Arenado. It's three more years. You know, it's if you can get him for $15 million a year. Now, that might cost prospects. I get it. I don't care. The time is now. You know what about the next 3 years? The next 3 years are the window we constantly talk about. Judge and Cole. That's it. Cole, certainly. It's 3 years. So if I got to trade prospects to make myself better this year and possibly the next couple, I still have first base open for anything else. And Nolan Arenado's money at $15 million or so wouldn't kill you. And you're going to get rid of Goldschmidt after a year. You could still go out and get the young superstar first baseman who's coming in from Japan next year. You could possibly still be in the marketplace for Vladimir Guerrero at first base next year. First base is still open to you. Third base is closed. Okay. In another 2 years, Stanton money's coming off the books. Another year, DJ LeMahieu's money's coming off the books. You'll be in a different position by the back end, the end of that Nolan Arenado contract. The time to win is now. And if you can find a way to make that work, that's I can't have DJ LeMahieu and or Oswaldo Cabrera be your starting third baseman. I can't do it. And I don't trust the deadline anymore. The deadline is no longer the same viable way to go out and make sure you can bolster your team. It just isn't. Not with the new playoff rule, not with the amount of teams that make it. Too many teams are unsure, and we don't know if they're buyers or sellers at that point. So many teams could be buyers. So few teams could be sellers. It's not the same way. Last year, they had, before they traded for Bellinger in the offseason, they had him 2 years ago. He was going to come to the Yankees. The Cubs were floundering. He was going to be a Yankee. And then they got hot for like a week and a half and changed where they were in the standings. In a hot week, the Cubs went from sellers to buyers and chasing down a National League playoff spot. Like, the trade deadline is not what it used to be. First, it needs to be moved back. That's a conversation for another day. But I can't trust the Yankees saying, oh, well, listen, the roster's never set until the trade deadline. I can't trust that. Too many teams in it, especially in a lousy American League. Who knows how many teams are still going to be in it? Can't do it. Go get Nolan Arenado. I've changed my mind. So, Cashman, if you're listening, I give you the blessing. I know you've been waiting for it. You have it. 888-808-1019. Let's get to Tommy in the story. What's up, Tommy?
Happy New Year, Chris.
Happy New Year to you, sir. What's going on?
Well, a few points. Point number one, I agree with you about the Met rotation. And don't forget, Quintana's not coming back. Quintana made the same amount of starts as Severino and actually had a lower ERA, pitched some big games. So he also lost Quintana. So I agree with you about the plan. The thing about the Yankees, I'm a Mets fan, but if I'm not wrong, if Soto would have came back, Cashman still would have improved his team.
I mean, he
would have made one of those JK for Luis Gil moves that Yankee fans never acknowledge, and
yes,
they would have filled holes, and it could have been better.
Well, here's what I'll tell. Looking at it honestly, like, and this is what, because a lot of people have asked this. Max Fried, forget him. He would have never been a Yankee. That's right. The one, right? Max, if they would have signed Juan Soto, you could forget that long-term deal for Max Fried, 100%. Even Bellinger, I don't know if they would have taken Bellinger's money on for $20 million a year. I don't know if they would have done that. But I do think the trade, there's no reason why they couldn't have went out and got Devin Williams. Like, they still could have made the trade for the closer. So,
and
like
the Trevino trade.
Right. And the Trevino trade, right. So if you asked me, like, what would the team look like? You're right. It would be that reliever as well as Devin Williams, the closer, and Juan Soto. That would be the offseason.
Can I just add one more thing?
Because
Ray calls up, and I know you're having a little fun, but you got me a little riled.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Soto said at the press conference, all he said was that he appreciated the way Alex Cohen and Steve Cohen approached him. That's where the whole family narrative came from. That doesn't mean that you're going to overpay for a guy like DeGrom, or you're going to give Pete what he doesn't deserve. They signed up Diaz. They signed up Nimmo. Mm-hmm. They're going to re-sign their players when it's warranted. Look, I love Pete. I'm not giving Pete six years. I wouldn't have brought DeGrom back. Look at DeGrom. It looks like he may never be the pitcher again.
Definitely ended up being the right move.
So it's not like they're pushing its family narrative. One guy says it at a press conference. Then it becomes fodder for...
I think it's a little more than that. And it was like family culture. And his wife gets involved. Alex Cohen gets involved. And, you know, they're known for
like... Well, that's
true, though. I understand. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm saying they're telling you that this is like a... You know, they want to win. They're creating a family atmosphere.
What does that have to do with bringing back Pete? I'm just saying.
When you say family, you take care of your own, and they haven't. Not just like two players on the team. It's arguably the two faces of the organization.
Not anymore, but I'm saying he was. I love my brother-in-law, but I'm not hiring him for a job he's not qualified for.
Come on. Now Pete Alonso's not qualified? He's one of the premier power hitters in the sport.
I'm not, I understand that.
He was going. He's going to be the greatest. He's going to be the greatest position player the franchise has ever had. That was a statement made by everyone a year ago.
That doesn't mean you overpay. You don't.
I'm not saying you overpay for him. I'm just saying. He got a contract offer turned down, and now he's offered 3 for $90. I mean, it's not the $30 million per year isn't bad, but 3 years for a guy who's the face of your franchise. I know Lindor just had an MVP season. Ask the Met fan who the face of the franchise was a year ago. They ain't saying Lindor. And yeah, am I having a little fun with the family idea? But I'm just saying the Mets haven't taken care of their own. I think that's fair. And these two guys weren't just some other guys. Jacob DeGrom was the Mets. Jacob DeGrom is in the long lineage of great pitchers for the New York Mets, and he was as good as any of them. And I'm not saying they had to keep him. Clearly, they were right not to. That was the right decision. But they offered Scherzer more money. That wasn't the right decision. They offered Verlander more money. Wasn't the right decision, necessarily. And they told Pete Alonso, I got $765 million in free suites and anything else that Juan Soto could have his heart desired. But I got 3 for $90 for you. Now, I'm not saying they're wrong. A caller brought it up. It's a fair point. The two most recent superstars, faces of the franchise, have not been treated well when it comes to getting paid. And it's partially Pete's fault for not having a good year, totally. And I'm not saying they should, negotiate against themselves. But let's not act like Pete now all of a sudden, I don't pay bums. That's not fair. And Pete Alonso was the face of the franchise. Pete Alonso was on his way to being the best position player to ever play for the team. That was said by everybody. That he could, that's what he could do. I would fight every day with Loogie about the best power hitter in New York. The premier power hitter in New York. Since 2019, he's got more home runs than Judge. Not anymore, but at the time. Just saying. A lot of family talk, not taking care of their guys. Even if it's the right thing to do. Mike in Palm Coast. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm a huge Yankee fan and a huge Met hater. 50 years. They make me laugh. They would go all giddy, the Mets, about Mr. Moneybags, the new owner, and this and that. Now with this family stuff, the guy's only been around for 4 years. He has an established a Steinbrenner-type family thing. Hey, that's a joke. Like, you just made great points about DeGrom and Alonso. This guy, we think the other 29 owners were idiots when they allowed Cohen to buy the team. They knew what he was going to do, and they taxed him, and they're laughing in his face. Go ahead, spend $500 million and give us $500 million. He can't. They know that Cohen is not going to spend $800 million and get like a $400 million value because he's paying double for everyone.
Right.
That ain't going to happen.
No, eventually. He's not going to. He's not going to spend infinitely. He's not going to spend forever or buy everybody. I think he will buy. Listen, and by the way, like the Pete Alonso stuff. Like, I'm not even saying they're. Don't get me wrong. And the Grom stuff. They were right. It was the right decision. I'm just, a caller mentioned it. It's a fair point. They haven't taken care of their own guys. Even if it's right, typically, and especially an owner who's done everything he could to give the fans what they want. The Tom Seaver statue, the alternate uniforms, Old Timers Day, retiring numbers, all of it. When their two heroes, and they were, DeGrom and Alonso, he hasn't been willing. Now, he's got time to change that narrative on Alonso, certainly. Alonso's not signed, and we'll see. If he takes a contract, then they re-signed him. But I mean, listen, to say, you know, I'm not trying to say they haven't built a family atmosphere, that he's not done a good job. Cohen's done a great job. I think he's done a very good job. He's done everything you could possibly want an owner to do. He's willing to spend the money, and he tries to accommodate you. Like, there's really nothing else. He listens to you. He listens to the fans. He gives them what they want, and he spends a ton of money. And, yes, he won't spend on everyone. Like, next year's free agency, if they don't sign Pete Alonso, I think you can bank on the idea that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will be here. But they're not going to also go get Kyle Tucker. They're not going to also go get, you know, the you know, whoever. I was about to say a starting pitcher, but they're not going to do that because, you know, that's a core belief of their current GM, David Stearns. He doesn't want to give long-term contracts to starting pitchers, which is a logical viewpoint. It's just, it's tough to compete with the Dodgers if you're going to do that and try to, you know, put together a makeshift rotation. Last year it worked for them. If it works for him again, I'm going to have to eat my words and just call him brilliant, because if he can do it again, if Frankie Montas and Clay Holmes pitch as well as Severino and Quintana down the stretch of the season, well, then hell. They do have the greatest pitching lab we've ever seen, and he can sign whoever he wants as a starting pitcher. He's figured out the code. But we'll see if that happens. But I think, honestly, if I were the Mets, I wouldn't sign Pete Alonso. I would sign Vladimir Guerrero next year. Because you have the owner who will go out and spend for the generational talent. That's really what you want. That's how you win free agency. You don't win free agency buying everybody. The Yankees have tried buying a lot of people. It hasn't always worked. The Dodgers have bought a lot of people. It has worked. It hasn't worked on years. But, like, it's not just bringing everybody in. It's when the right free agent is there, pouncing. Soto, pounce. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 27 years old, superstar first baseman. Go get him. You lock the two of them up in the middle of the order? I mean, you have that. I mean, you want to talk about a top of the order. I mean, that's, you got Lindor leading off, Soto and Vladimir Guerrero as your top three. And then Vientos hitting fourth. That's a dangerous top of the order that's going to be there for a decade in their prime. So that's the question. Like, you trying to win this year? Clearly. But again, the Mets had the seventh best offense in Major League Baseball last year. They scored runs. Like, you know, wasn't the best, could always get better. But they scored the seventh most runs in Major League Baseball last year, and they just added Juan Soto. Yeah, they lose Pete Alonso, but they've added Juan Soto. There's other pieces, obviously, and OMG and Winker and some different guys who aren't here right now, but, like, I scored the seventh most runs. I still have a superstar third baseman emerging, and hopefully will continue what he did. I've just added Juan Soto. My offensive young catcher's got to be better this year than he was last year. Like, do I need Pete Alonso? Do I need to lock up first base to a wrong side of 30, not sure how he's going to age, average at best defensive player who has now trended downward the last two consecutive years? Or do I see if I can have a stopgap at first base, still score enough runs with Juan Soto, and even if I don't, the team isn't in a win-now desperation mode for me. I got a young owner. I got a young new rich owner. I got the smart young executive, and I got a brand-new manager. I got Juan Soto for the next 15 years. Let's see how this team looks. If I need to make a trade at the deadline to add a bat, I will. And I got Vladimir Guerrero next year to go pay. Now, there's no guarantee he hits free agency. There's no guarantee they win it in free agency. But if they want it, if that's the plan, if somehow through the grapevine it gets to Vladimir Guerrero that we're going to target you and we don't lose when we target players, you think he's going to sign a contract? Think he's going to sign an extension in Toronto where no one wants to go play? Vladimir Guerrero is not getting this close to free agency and then not seeing it through. Not when he knows Steve Cohen could possibly be there. So while, yeah, you know, I'm having a little bit of fun and giving you the honest opinion about how they haven't treated their two superstars all that great, I don't even think it's in their best interest to sign Pete Alonso. I think it makes sense to pass on Pete and wait for Vladimir Guerrero. If he could trade for him, even better. But he ain't, he's not signing any contract if it's made clear to him in you know, some sort of way through back channels that they'll be interested in him. He ain't signing a contract. Not with Steve Cohen and all that money getting into a bidding war. No way. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll come back with more of your calls right here on The Fan. All right, 435. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. The other topic before I get back to the calls that we haven't had a chance to talk about was Saquon Barkley, obviously, doing a sleep aid commercial where he literally, I mean, I've seen people, I've seen the tweets, and it's like the question mark, like, is he taking a direct shot at John Mara? He literally turns to the camera and says, I understand you guys are having trouble sleeping about football. It's a direct line from John Mara saying, I'm going to have trouble sleeping if he goes to Philadelphia. Of course it's a, like, is it a lighthearted jab that I wouldn't think John Mara would take exception to? Sure, but he does a sleep aid commercial, and he literally looks at the camera and says, I understand you guys are having trouble sleeping. About football, you shouldn't. I'm going to be sleeping like a baby. And then he tells a lullaby about, you know, I understand you're having trouble sleeping, so I wrote you a lullaby, and it's about, you know, dreaming of 2,000 yards. Like, it's a complete shot at the Giants. Do we need this? And honestly, who cares? Laugh at it. It was funny. It's a good job out of Saquon Barkley. And you know what? I don't care. Throw all the insults at when you're like this, and he's like, he won. Now, they still have to go out there and win a championship or win a playoff game, but like, I thought it was funny. I'm trying to laugh at this stuff. I'm trying to laugh at the mocking of my own teams. It's easier with the Giants because they deserve it. And I don't know if John Mara necessarily deserved that shot when he's the one sticking up for Saquon Barkley and wanted Saquon Barkley on the team. But, and here's the other thing. What makes me laugh about all of this, right? What makes me laugh about all of this is the Giants fought forever, tooth and nail, to not be on Hard Knocks. They wanted no part of it. No part of Hard Knocks. And then they cave on this off-season edition. I mean, it's amazing to me that that was the decision. Like, no, I don't want the typical Hard Knocks where it's about football and some side story about, you know, a guy and his young family and whatever the side story is and some random player that's going to get cut halfway into it. That, who needs a half hour on that? Who needs a show about actual, you know, play calling or practice or anything? No. Let's put cameras in our offices and have our decisions on how we build a team and how we view our players. The one part of Hard Knocks that nobody wants is when they talk to the player for real and cut them, you know, it's all, coach said, bring your notebook. And then they show him walking out of the room because they don't want to show in the room where they describe what they think of the player or what's going on. Like, that's where they want to keep the cameras out of. Keep it on the field, on the practice field. That's what the Giants fought for years. And now, no. Let's come on in. Come on into our offices, and as an owner, I will talk about Saquon Barkley, and I will set myself up for this. And we will allow statements that have come back to mock them. Like, you knew. Like, unless, I still think moving on from Saquon Barkley was the right thing. Because he wouldn't be doing commercials joking about dreaming about 2,000 yards if he was with the New York Giants. Okay? He just wouldn't be. Because he wouldn't be anywhere near 2,000 yards. We all know it. I still think it's the right move for the team at the moment. I hated drafting him, not because I didn't think he was a great player, but because the Giants weren't ready for it. The Giants were holding Saquon Barkley back from being this type of player. We all knew it. So even with Joe Shane's $40 million to a $12 million running back and all the phone call and how poorly he was handled, everything about that, I agree with his thought process. But you had to know. Like, you had to know. If you let him go and he signs with a quality team, I guess there's a chance for an injury. He's usually good for one. He's good for a 3-week, 4-week absence with a high ankle sprain. But you knew he was going to have good moments. And he was going to be more successful, at least in the short term, with another organization. And you set yourself up more than any other team who's ever done Hard Knocks. I mean, the Browns have done Hard Knocks. The Bengals did Hard Knocks during their, you know, losing seasons. Like, everyone, the Jets did Hard Knocks. The Jets did Hard Knocks with Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, before the worst 2 years of their franchise's history. And that wasn't nearly as embarrassing as you allowing people to see how the sausage is made. I don't understand it. Like, that's when I see all of this crap and all the people making fun of the Giants, and I see Saquon Barkley having fun. I'm not mad at Saquon Barkley. I'm not even upset that he's, you know, sitting. I'm not upset that he's rushing for 2,000 yards. I'm not upset they're about to go play a playoff game. I'm not upset he's you know, hurtling over people backwards. I don't care about any of that. I care about the New York Football Giants, and they embarrass themselves for no reason. I mean, I don't know if they were forced. I don't know any of that. But it's funny that for years, they didn't want any part of this. And then they allowed it's so much worse than a regular Hard Knocks. I mean, think of the famous moments from other Hard Knocks. It's like, what? Let's go, you know, let's go bleep it, have a snack. Like, that's like, you allowed yourself to make decisions about great players, let them go, have it be on camera, and be snide about it. And talk to Frank Gore about, yeah, you know, he's 27, he played a lot, and he had a lot of snaps at Penn State, too, and blah, blah, blah. Like, all of this. Amazing. Only the Giants. And now they have an opportunity to win a football game, and with that win, make it harder to get a quarterback, and make it less likely to keep the damn regime. Like, I honestly, if it were me running the football team, the football coach who lost 10 in a row would not get fired for losing 10 in a row. He would get fired for winning the last two. And that's just bizarro world. And I'm not even saying I'm right. I don't know. But to me, once you were dead, I didn't care about the losing anymore. Like, I either believed in this regime, I believed in the draft of last year, I believed in his ability to develop a young quarterback, and we were on that path, so I was in. But now, if they can't get a path, if they can't get a young quarterback, if they can't move up from eighth, and God knows what it would take, you're going to have other teams with better picks in front of you. Who knows what you would even have to give up to move up from 8 or 9 to 1. I don't even know what you'd have. It's your whole draft. If these two wins cost them the ability to get the young quarterback, what do I need Shannon Dable for? Like, they were brought here to do that. They were force-fed a quarterback they didn't love. They won with him year one. They gave him a terrible contract on them, totally on them. Didn't bring in another suitable quarterback to be a backup on them. Had bust in the first round, offensive line, you know, edge rusher, you name it. Allowed Saquon Barkley to leave, although I agree with it. Obviously, you know, a tough thing when a great talent like that leaves your organization and then damn near wins the MVP as a running back. In today's NFL, difficult to do. McKinney leading the NFL in interceptions, like letting him go. All of that's on them. But these two wins, if they get this second one, have eliminated them from doing the only damn thing I thought they could do. Because if you're going to tell me they're just going to bring in another quarterback in here, okay, maybe they can win some games. But when you look at all the losing, when you look at the infighting, when you look at what he did, you know, taking the play calling away and giving it back and taking it away and giving it back to Kafka last year and screaming at him and yelling at him and getting to the point with your defensive coordinator where he's so miserable in the situation. A defensive coordinator, no less, that freaking was one of the main, if not the main reason you were playing in the playoffs your first year. You allow him to get so pissed off and so unhappy in the situation that he has his underlings, you know, going out and feeding stories to Glazer to talk about how bad the situation is with the New York Giants and their head football coach, and he's cursing you out the door on his way to Michigan. Like, what the hell has Brian Daboll shown you other than the ability to get the best out of Daniel Jones, the quarterback, and get the best out of Tommy DeVito, an undrafted free agent who the first time we saw him wasn't allowed to throw a pass against the Jets, and within a few weeks, he was beating a team that was went on to win playoff games in Green Bay. Like, that's the only thing that I can even point to that can tell you anything. And I know most fans don't want to hear any of it. It all sucks. He stinks. You got to get rid of him. He's terrible. The only thing I can point to, the only thing, is that he was able to limit the amount of turnovers that Daniel Jones was committing. I mean, week one, he throws a terrible red zone interception. Daboll gets in his face, and suddenly he's the least turned over quarterback in the league. Then he turns Tommy DeVito from a guy who's not allowed to throw a pass against the Jets to going out there and throwing touchdown passes and beating a Green Bay team that was on their way to possibly playing in the NFC Championship game if they didn't blow the opportunity. He was able to win games with Tyrod Taylor and get better production from that once, you know, Daniel Jones went down last year. Like, the only thing this guy has ever done is help develop Josh Allen, and the only thing he's ever done in a Giants uniform is stop the turnovers from the turnover machine of the NFL and get Tommy DeVito to actually be something for a few games. Like, that's all I've seen. So unless I'm handing him Sanders' award, what hell do I need him for? Why am I putting up with the worst season in 100 years? Because he's got two culture wins at the end of the year because the team didn't give up on him? Because he won Coach of the Year year one? I mean, it sounds like a bad work environment, and they've done nothing but lose. There was one way. There was one avenue to keep his job. And he knows it because he's out, you know, the reports are he's creating some sort of, you know, plan to show the owner on why he shouldn't be fired on Monday. And I can tell you what number one is. I can tell you right at the top of the plan. Brian, here it is right here. I got it right here. I got an advanced copy of Brian Daboll's plan, manifesto, to bring to John Mara to explain why he keeps his job. Number one, here it is right here. Number one. I develop quarterbacks. Number two, please, sir. That's it. So, you know. But, hey, it's a very nice win. They played well against the Colts. That was very nice. I was happy to see it. And now the Eagles are going to sit players, but God forbid the Giants do it. I mean, you got the Browns playing their backup quarterback, playing, you know, lousy players. The Patriots probably aren't going to play May. The Eagles have already determined the game's meaningless, but if I say, hey, don't play people, then it's integrity. It's about wins. You can't tank. You know, the players got to play. The coach has got to coach. It's about building something. You have young players here for next year. Absolute garbage. If they don't want to play their players and the opponent deems the game meaningless, that's meaningless to me too. And if this game is close, you want to see me upset? I don't know if you want to see me upset. But if you want to really get me upset, if this game at the half is like 21-17 Eagles or, you know, I don't know, 17-14 Giants, Tommy DeVito better be the starting quarterback. And Malik Nabers better have his ass on the bench. Because there is no reason to go out there and try and win this football game. None. None. Because there's a path to possibly get back to the top of this draft with the fourth pick. I don't know how you do it from the eighth. And even at four, it might be gone. It's just... And if it is, then unfortunately, like, I don't just, why keep him? move on. Because if I'm going to believe in these guys, I have to give them multiple years. Like, to me, it's silly. Like, you just had two of the worst years you could possibly ever have, and this year was just hideous. Right? And Brian and Joe Shane had one good draft, this most recent one. Like, if you're going to make a decision to keep these guys, why would you do it for 1 year? And you know, you look at the schedule next week. Keith and I talked about this on Tuesday, whatever day it was, earlier this week. The home schedule for next week is a disaster. Like, it is impossible to navigate. They're not going to be good next year. They're going to lose again next year. So why would you keep this regime unless they're in the middle of a rebuild? Unless they are starting rebuild number two. The only plausible way to keep them is to say, okay, rebuild one, or at least what we hired you for, you're 1 year one, you had the mulligan. You get a mulligan. Here's rebuild number two. But rebuild number two doesn't actually start if you don't have a young quarterback. Rebuild number two doesn't start with drafting an offensive lineman seventh in the draft. Because I've seen them draft offensive linemen. I've seen them hit on offensive linemen. I've seen them miss on offensive linemen. You know what hasn't changed? The offensive line play. So I don't, like, this is the most unbelievable couple of weeks of positive play on the field that could completely uproot the future of the freaking franchise. It changes how I feel about the GM and the coach. It changes where they are in the draft. It changes their future at the quarterback position. It changes whether or not they view next year as a rebuild year. What do they bring in? A veteran quarterback and try and win next year because they got Malik Nabers? Like, I don't... Damn you, Joe Flacco. Like... That team just didn't show up, and I'm never going to forgive them. That's it. I'm done. Done with the Colts. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll come back and get you to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Yeah, I'm still hung up on the Giants knocking themselves out of the top of the draft. It's just it's going to hang with me for a while. I can't. I've made the reference before. We were Giant fans, at least I felt. We were Andy Dufresne, man. We were Andy Dufresne crawling through a tunnel of crap for weeks. And we were supposed to come out clean on the other side. There was a light at the end of that crap tunnel. We were going to come out, we were going to stand in the pouring rain and cleanse ourselves with a first overall pick and a quarterback. Doesn't guarantee freedom, or it doesn't guarantee success. It doesn't guarantee he's going to be the greatest player in the NFL. You know, who knows? It might not even be a franchise quarterback. But at least we would have had that chance, and I believe, certainly, I'm a Cam Ward guy. I think he certainly is. I think Shedeur Sanders has the ability to as well. But whatever we went through all that crap. And then at the end, they take it away from us. And now they're not in a position, and I don't even know if I want the coach and GM now. And I know that there's that other angle of whether or not they'll feel forced to make the trade. And sure, of course, I don't feel as good about Cam Ward if I'm trading draft picks for him. I had him free. They were there and ready to pick him. The value is completely different now if you're trading draft equity, and certainly if you're doing it from eighth. I don't even know if that's plausible, nor is it really what I want to do. But if you believe in him and you love him, I think you got to go do it. But and that's why I'm not even worried about that, because if Joe Shane and Brian Daboll are given the opportunity to trade up for Sanders or trade up for Cam, they're not going to get fired the next year, because next year's not going to be winning anyway. So, like, I was listening to Evan. He's like, well, you're going to really let this lame duck GM, if they bring him back and let him do that, they're going to give him a couple years. Like, I don't think it's going to. John Mara just recognized what happens to young quarterbacks when you fire their head coach after a year, when you constantly change things on them. If these two are allowed to move up to draft a quarterback, they're here for the rebuild. And as much as I hate that idea with all the draft equity being lost and losing picks, I'd rather do that than take another offensive lineman or some position that won't even matter if he's good anyway. And I know that's not entirely true, but it feels that way with the New York Giants for sure. Well, that's the end of our first Football Friday of the year. Everybody, have a great weekend. Jack, thank you very much. Thank you guys for calling, and thank you for listening. The warm-up show is next. I'll catch you back Monday with reaction to what happened with the Giants and Jets.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAU.